Hey, welcome to the Guy Code Podcast. I am Ryan McKee, Guy Code Blog Editor, here with Ryan Ling, show creator, executive producer. And today we have Dan Soder.
Yeah. The sixth man. That's what I call myself on Guy Code. I'm the big Eastern European that comes in and bangs down some shots and goes back to the bench. That's what I am.
I don't think you're the sixth man.
I put myself as, I like it though. I'm like Ray Allen now.
All right.
I've got older knees, but I can still shoot.
You're making outside shots though.
Yeah, I got graying temples. You didn't get me out of college, but I'm a journeyman. And I showed up and I do my job.
I was a big fan of Tony Kukoc.
So. Yeah, I'd love to be. Can I be the Tony Kukoc of Guy Code? That's what I'm calling myself.
You should start assigning basketball players to each cast member.
Well, here's the deal. Like, Schultz is the point guard. He gets things moving. Mm-hmm. Charlemagne is like the level-headed two guard.
I can see that.
Chris D is a nice three, you know. D Lemon is at four.
Where's John Gabris?
Five. Gabris is a big man.
Put him down low.
Yeah, he's the Shaq of this podcast. And then, you know, you got guys like Jermaine, Kevin, and I.
But you come in on the six man, mix it up. You're just a shooter, like, score.
Yeah. I'm coming off the bench, but I'm giving you good minutes. I'm not giving you junk minutes.
I don't know what Donnell would be. I'm trying to think.
Donnell's like the he's the KG vet.
Yeah.
That does start sometimes. He's like KG. Mm-hmm. If you have him healthy, you put him in the starting lineup.
Comes in and murders.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be a solid 20 minutes. Anything past that, you never know.
Yeah, you don't know.
It could go either way.
You don't know. But yeah, this is fun. I like doing
this.
Hit
you hard.
Basketball positions for Guy Code cast members.
We should have done heels and...
Oh, baby faces?
Yeah.
Baby faces and heels. We're going promo. Oh, we're going pro wrestling talk. We'll be here all afternoon. Julian's a baby face. Schultz is a baby face.
Baby face.
I'm a baby face heel. So I'm a heel that you kind of like. I got like the cool sayings that you could yell back. I'll use a chair.
Some fans that come out just to see you.
Yeah, but I have most friends like, I don't know if I like this guy. And most of the time I'm the heel. But I'm cool with that.
Heel's a good position to be.
Heels are what makes professional.
What's a professional wrestler right now that you would equate yourself to as that?
Jack Swagger. No. I'm super xenophobic. No, I'm thinking, I don't really keep up to date with, I'm more of a historian when it comes to professional wrestling.
Got it.
I think that's the best way to be.
Yeah.
Simply because I don't know anything that's going on.
Yeah, after the Attitude Era, I kind of.
You're saying you don't still buy the packages?
I buy WrestleMania every year. It's the one thing I watch every year. I'll watch a couple Raws, a couple SmackDowns to get ready for WrestleMania. Then I watch WrestleMania, and then I wait till the next year. So I'm a casual wrestling fan. Don't knock
Fair enough.
Wrestling.
Hey.
It's great.
So this is going to drop the day before Guy Code or Guy Court premiere. Sorry.
Yeah.
So we're talking Guy Court.
Guy Court was great, man.
And how was it feeding off the crowd? Is it like, did it feel like doing stand-up at all? Or is it anything, can you equate that at all?
It was a little like doing stand-up, but it's also like when you're filming Guy Code, I feel like you kind of are going off the energy in the room. You know, if you're making the sound guy laugh, you're probably like, all right, this is probably pretty funny. And I'll keep some of this.
Mm-hmm.
Guy Court, there was more pressure because you were in and out. You had to go in, get your lines in, feed off the crowd. And then, like, there were some guys that were just killer on Guy Court. Like, Chico Bean was just an animal. That dude, you know, good luck. Good luck beating him for the crowd because the crowd loved him. But it was fun. It was fun feeding off the energy. Donnell was just the best. I mean, talk about just the greatest guy to have as the judge.
Mm.
So funny.
Just quick.
Quick. Kept moving it along. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's an interesting format. I mean, when you're there in person, the crowd is so crazy.
Yeah.
And then in the edit, I think it is interesting because it feels like a three-person stand-up show.
Yeah.
That has a storyline.
It's funny because it really, I kept feeling like when they would introduce us to the crowd, it kept feeling like that moment in Gladiator where he's like, win the crowd, win your freedom. And you're like standing there and then they're like, lawyer, the prosecution, that's all right. You come out and you're like clanging your metal things together and you're like standing in the middle of the Coliseum. Ah. But it was fun.
Did you watch any like John Grissom movies before like getting
he died and I hope it burns in hell. No, I didn't get to watch any Time to Kills. I didn't watch any courtroom dramas. I went, it was funny because it was like you go in and you don't know what to expect, and then once you're done with your first case, you're like, oh, this is how it's just gonna go. And I think you get a lot more comfortable after the first one. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like boxing or football. After the first hit, you're just like, okay, I'm in this.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's do this.
Yeah. I'm excited for everybody to see it. You're in the premiere episode.
Yeah. With your Charlemagne and I.
Yep. The disappearing gamer.
Yeah, but the dude that I still think is a G, but he disappeared for playing too many video games, which I totally relate to. But it was so much fun, man. It was just fun to see the Guy Code cast members, because a lot of times you're filming Guy Code, you're by yourself, and you know, you see the producers and the directors and that kind of stuff, and occasionally you bump into another cast member, but this was like you went in, you knew who you were going to see. You didn't know who was doing other cases, so you walk in, see Gabrus or, you know, Chris or Schultz or Damian.
Did you get competitive when you were around the other lawyers?
I think it was competitive when you're just doing the case.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're like, all right, I want to get a good pop right here. And if you got a good pop, if you like, I shut Jermaine down. That felt really good to dominate one case, especially Jermaine, because Jermaine and I have been friends for years, and it was just fun just to really just a nice 42-7. You know, real everyone left in the third quarter. This was blown out. Even Donnell was like, even the refs are like, we're just going to give him the ball and put it at the 50-yard line. It's like, yeah, this is great.
I like the amount of shit talking that goes on in the dressing room afterwards, because all the other lawyers were always watching the case.
It really was like professional wrestling, where you're like derobing. You're like, all right, brother, I got a good slam on you. And it was fun to watch, like, you know, like Gabrus and Schultz kind of bicker after their case. They had a case where I think Gabrus was like, yeah, but, you know. And then, like, you see that, and you're like, this is awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
It was fun. It was fun competition.
It's the Hurricane Dan Soder.
Yeah. Soaking you in the waters of justice. Plus, cutting those promos were the shit. They were just like, hey, just do. One of the guys that was doing it worked for the WWE.
Yeah.
He was like a writer on the WWE.
Andrew Goldstein.
Yeah, okay. Andrew Goldstein.
That's cool.
And so Andrew was like, dude, I used to work for the WWE. I'm like, seriously, can I just cut a promo? And I didn't imagine they were going to use any of the footage. I was like, can I just go fucking nuts? And he's like, absolutely. I'm a wrestling fan, an old school wrestling fan. Mm-hmm. He's an old school wrestling fan. So it just worked out where it was like, oh, you do this. You
know, so brilliant.
Yeah, and then they used it. And then I go in and Ryan's like, you got to see the promo. And I'm like, oh, nice. Man, you guys used a ton of the shit that I didn't think you were going to use. So it was fun.
Got to definitely put that online.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. No spoilers, but did you have any cases that you got and you're like, I don't really see where this guy's coming from? Or
there was one where I was basically like, oh, so I'm doing this case to be the evil white lawyer. There was one case about R&B where I was like, there's no way I can't look like a white senator from Alabama in the 50s that's like, this is the devil's music. Like, there was no way. I tried coming out of it looking okay. There were a couple of positions where I was like, this is a tough one to fight out of. And I defended one girl in a case. I think it was a booty thirsty case.
She was hot.
She was hot, but she wasn't hot enough to act the way she acted.
Nah.
Where
she was like, really weird.
She was weird, and she kept derailing the case. Where she would be like,
she was not helping her own cause.
No, she'd be like, we didn't hook up. He'd be like, yes, you did.
Like, that's
we
why
you
have
the testimony that says you hooked up with this guy. And she's like, I didn't hook up with them. And you're like, oh, because you're on TV trying to save some face.
Yeah.
And it debunked all of, like, literally most of my jokes that I had were thrown out the window because she changed. It's like, you know when you watch a court thing and someone goes like, I didn't, like when the mob talks to a guy, he's like, I didn't see nothing. I didn't see nothing. You're like, you just said that Tony Fingers murdered this guy. He's like, I ain't see nothing. And then like there's a guy in the back of the courtroom who's like, that's right, you didn't see nothing. That's what she did to me. Where she's like, I didn't do that. I'm like, oh.
Her story literally changed from
the
second
cameras,
floor to downstairs.
Exactly. From the green room to when we were filming, her story changed. And then you kind of saw what kind of girl she was after the taping. She's like, great working with Melanie Iglesias. Melanie's like, we didn't work together.
Yeah.
You were a contestant, basically.
She's like, I just got 4 Twitter followers.
Yeah, and it was like, that was the where. That's the only one I was pissed, where I was like, because I don't destroy my jokes.
Mm-hmm.
We got these cases. We had briefings. Like, we were real lawyers. Like, we met up at the MTV offices. And then you're going to say that that didn't happen? Oh, I was furious. She's my own client, too. Oh, God. Poor guy.
You might have brought home a W, though.
Yeah. Maybe I did. Maybe I didn't.
Tune in to see. So one of the things that we talk about on the podcast is just kind of we ask everybody kind of where they learned their guy code from growing up. And I know you talk in your stand-up about growing up with a single mom.
Yeah.
So
I learned mine from TV.
I learned it from watching wrestling. Is that
from yeah? From a lot of places that a lot of the Guy Code fans learn their Guy Code from watching TV. I had good uncles, you know, and I had a good friends' dads mm-hmm. to teach me. But then I really learned it. I think I learned my Guy Code the most by being in the workforce, by like working with older dudes and then being like, don't do that. Mm-hmm. Like, don't. Or asking them questions, because this is before.
Like, what kind of jobs did you have?
I did everything, man. Restaurants a lot. I was a busboy. You know, I worked at a kosher bagel place. I did concert security, and then I moved to Alaska and I did fishing. That's where I learned most of my Guy Code.
That's incredible.
Yeah, but you learn like
what kind of fishing?
I did salmon and halibut. I worked on the dock crew,
mm-hmm.
and so we would. You know, I learned a lot about work ethic and being a real man, like a real. Calloused hand, dude.
Because if you fuck up there,
you might lose a limb.
Thrown overboard.
Yeah, you might lose a limb, or you're gonna lose people money.
Yeah,
and they don't fuck around like that. Man. This isn't like there is a lot of good things that Guy Code does, but there's also some funny stuff that it's clearly it's a comedy show, so there's clearly stuff that it's funny. But like in Alaska, their Guy Code was like, we're not fucking around. Like it wasn't called Guy Code; it was like Money Code, like man, like. It was man rules. Like, that's how real it was, where it's like, don't fuck this up.
What's disrespectful, or, like, what is the Guy Code to a salmon fishing boat, or halibut?
Do what you're told. Don't mess it up. Do exactly what they ask.
Speak when spoken to.
You really, you know, like, I feel like this is a generation that we're watching. A lot of our fans are younger people, and they have access to the internet where they can just post their, they can be mean to people mm-hmm. or post their own thoughts. With no whiplash.
They feel anonymous.
They feel anonymous, but they feel like individuals. They're like, I'm important. Mm-hmm. That's why people talk shit on Twitter. They're like, this guy sucks. Well, what do you do?
Right.
What exactly. do you do? And that accountability is kind of gone mm-hmm. with the internet. Whereas, like, when I was in Alaska, if I fucked off, well, I had to look at an older man in the face that was my boss and be like, I screwed up. And it'll be like, you know what I mean? There was accountability.
Yeah.
And there Everybody, seems like there's a lot of, that's like the most Guy Code shit is being accountable. Like, are you accountable for your actions? And that's what, like, in Alaska, that taught me, like, if you're not, people are going to be pissed and you're going to be terrified.
And this was a summer job you did when you were how old?
18. In between my freshman and sophomore year of college, I went up to Kenai, Alaska and just did.
You must have met, like, a ton of crazy dudes that just do this seasonal work all the time.
Yeah, there was a lot of guys that would do it during the summer. Like, they would just do salmon and halibut, and then they moved to Thailand and just build boats.
Wow.
Just, like, random shit like that. Like, that's
really? Just build boats? That's what they were doing in Thailand?
And ladyboys.
Black tar heroin.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, there's guys like that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's... Like, what defines a man? And then you're like, what defines, like, a dude? Like, what's a guy, like, a guy that's willing to live in Thailand for 8 months that's is someone crazy, you don't man. Fuck with. You don't fuck
You don't
with
even look him in the eye, let alone.
Yeah, you don't fuck with someone that lives in a lawless country for 8 months.
Someone who can disappear
yes,
without a trace. You do not want to fuck him over.
Yeah, so it's like, talk shit to him on Twitter.
Yeah.
Or talk shit to him. Let's see what happens. That guy will remove one of your limbs.
Wow.
And not even blink. So it's like, that's where I learned my, that's like, I learned my P's and Q's.
It's a good place.
Yeah, to be like, I'm not fucking with this dude. That's a real man.
Do you feel like that work ethic you learn carries over into your stand-up and Absolutely. Show business?
Absolutely. I think it was the greatest thing I could have ever learned. When you don't want to go to work, you're tired, you haven't slept, you go to work. You just go. Just show up to work. You know,
mm-hmm.
it was 16-hour days, 7 days a week for 3 months. And there's days where we drink. We get all, you know, we work mm-hmm. 8 a.m. to midnight with like an hour break for lunch, an hour break for dinner, and a couple 15-minute breaks. But you're working the whole day and working. And then we get drunk mm-hmm. at midnight. Have like 9 beers in like 45 minutes, be hammered. And then you're up at 7:15 to eat breakfast because you need to eat so you have energy.
Yeah.
And it's like you just learned.
Just learn to work through a hangover.
And it helped me, especially starting, you know, moving here to do stand-up and having to have a day job and having to wait tables at 10 a.m., but being out till 2 in the morning because, you know, there's an open mic at 1 a.m. and at the Bowery Poetry Club. And so you're up late, going to eating late, and then waking up, and it's like, I saw a lot of people that I waited tables with that just no call, no shows. I just couldn't. I was tired. Yeah. Well, no matter what, if you get in this game, someone's going to be working harder than you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't all think people realize how hard stand-up comedians and you guys on the show actually work at your craft.
Dude, it's like, look at Schultz. He has like 7 shows.
Yeah.
And he does stand-up.
But even with, yeah, without the shows, though, like getting to know you guys.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of, it's like every day.
Yeah.
Like, I'm taking tonight off because my girlfriend loves Halloween. Mm-hmm. Sorry to spoil it. We recorded this on Halloween. But my girlfriend wants to do so. It's like, this is the one day I take off for the next 2 months.
Yeah.
And it's so I can do something with my girlfriend so she's not mad.
Just so she doesn't leave you.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. It's like bare minimum. It's like these people that are like, oh, I took a vacation. It's like, I would love to take a vacation. A vacation to me is the 2 hours I get after shows to play Madden before I have to go to bed, to wake up, to come and film Guy Code or something else or whatever job I can get. Because you're lucky to get work in this game. And so you better show up for your work.
Because
if you don't show up, someone else will. And they'll probably be better than you.
Yeah.
So it's like showing up, performing, it's tough, man.
And but that's a comment that Ryan gets, and we get on the Guy Code Twitter all the time. It's like, well, why aren't I on Guy Code?
Because
like
you couldn't have
don't
it.
Work all the time to get on. They're like, yeah. You have to do something before they just put you on shit.
Yeah, that's always my favorite. People are like, yo, man, get me on Guy Code. You're like, I barely got myself on. I jumped on season 3.
I know.
You don't think, like, not only that, but like, come in the room. Let's see if you can sit in a room by yourself with a cameraman and a producer and go off these questions and be funny about it.
To a room that can't laugh.
Yeah, they're not allowed to laugh. It's interesting because I think it's one of those things. Comedy is always one of those things that everyone thinks that they can do. They're the first. It's one of the reasons that stand-up is so tough is because everyone criticizes it thinking they can do it better.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's not funny. I'm funny. Bullshit. If you've ever said that, you're probably not funny. And if you are that funny, go do an open mic.
Yeah.
Jump in the game.
You're like the funny office guy, but that doesn't necessarily translate to on stage.
I've seen that. I've seen funny office guys try to do stand-up. It's great because they eat their dick. And then it's like what Axl Rose says, get in the ring. Yeah. Like, you're that tough? Why don't you get in the ring? You're that funny? Let's see what you can do. Why don't you come out and try to do some sets?
It's probably similar to YouTube.
Oh, dude.
Personalities, YouTube. Which, you know, have a lot of success and make a lot of money, but
they can't do it in front of a group of strangers that have never seen them.
Yeah.
Those are their fans that they've built.
Yeah.
So people want to hear them talk.
Mm.
Yeah, you see stand-up on TV. You see Louis C.K. and all these big guys doing theaters. Well, they've earned that after 20 years of going to cities where no one knew them and doing 6 shows and, you know, having bad shows and you're by yourself in a hotel room late at night. It's like, let's really see how much shit you want to talk once you wear the shoe. Walk a mile in someone's shoes.
I think the thing that I've learned, like, I came outside from the comedy world and just seeing what you guys do, like, there are no shortcuts. You have to put in the work. And, like, it's like these YouTube stars and, like, internet people can do it, but they have to do the work.
Yeah. Because
it is a supreme craft. And
what's interesting is
they might be able to do it.
Some people get big pops early,
mm-hmm.
and people get upset about it. Other comedians are like, well, why are they? But it's like, calm down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a marathon.
We'll see how they shake up.
Yeah, right.
You could have a hot start. You could have a real hot start. But if you haven't done the work and you don't know, if you haven't earned it, it'll go away. If you go up fast, you're going to come down fast. But if you build it slow, like, that's basically my philosophy. Because I'm an aggressive, white, straight man. You know what I mean? No one wants me to be famous. Like, I have to earn whatever I get, and I love it that way.
Right.
Because I know anyone that actually is a fan that comes out to see me from whatever podcasts I do or from my stand-up that's been on TV, mm-hmm. if they come and see me, I know that they like me for the work that I do, not because of a look that I have or, you know what I mean, or because it's sexy to like me. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, this guy is funny. Mm-hmm. This guy who does his work, and I do my work. And a lot of the guys, that's what's great about watching the show, is like, a lot of the guys that are on the show I'm friends with and I've seen work their ass off in stand-up. And they're getting it, you know, and they get stuff now. It's like Julian's one of my favorite comedians. I've known about Julian for 8-9 years.
Yeah, he's great.
And you, like, go see his stand-up and you're like, oh, this guy knows his shit.
Yeah.
Right.
You know? So I think that's something that's being devalued because of YouTube and because of Twitter, mm-hmm. is earning it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, you can be a pop sensation, Or you can go be Keith Richards and learn how to play the guitar inside and out to the point where you can do heroin and still play the guitar. You know what I mean? Like, who wants to work? Do you want to work for it, or do you want it just to, you know, I didn't mean this podcast turned into a Tony Robbins speech.
No, I'm inspired right now.
But it is like,
I got to get out of here and start doing shit.
Yeah, but working is, like, back to the Alaska thing, you really saw hard work pay off. There's nothing better than being tired because you've worked.
Mm-hmm.
When you're just like, I'm fucking tired. I put everything out there today. I have no energy left.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, well, maybe I, you know, then tomorrow I'll do it again. And then you look back. It's like when I was an open micer, I was like, oh, I can't. I want to be doing shows at Caroline's or the Cellar. Like, and then, like, you see the guys that are there, and you're like, oh, well, these guys are fucking really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go and you work. And then you turn around 7 years later, and you're like, oh, I'm working these shows. You know,
right. And that's got to be a better feeling, like putting in the work and getting success and feeling prepared and like you deserve to be there, as opposed to like I would feel if you got an early pop.
Yeah.
You find yourself in these situations at the Cellar, you know, all this expectation. Well, I would be freaking out a little
bit. The thing with undeserved success is you'll always notice that the people that have it, they're the ones that tend to be a little more arrogant. They're the ones that tend to be like, well, give me a water. Well, I want this isn't hot enough. They're those people because that's insecurity because they know it's going to go away. Right. But when you're comfortable and you've known you've earned everything, then most of the time you're a decent person. You're like, hey, thanks, man. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Eye contact with people, remember people's names, which sometimes I'm even bad at because I'm a huge pothead.
But they never. Maybe part of it too is they never learned the humility of struggling.
Yeah.
And sucking for that long. Like they just kind of came, and it's so like, they just think their shit doesn't stink.
Exactly. It's like rich kids. Rich kids are the worst because they just think you're supposed to have a lot of money. When you're like, no. You should have no money for a little bit. Like when people, I talk to people and like Pete Davidson, I've known Pete since he was a little kid, since he started doing stand-up. I've known Pete.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, my advice to Pete is always be 19. Yeah you're having success, but go be a 19-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Have your mom, whatever guy code money you make, have your mom take it.
Yeah.
Be poor. Learn creative ways to get drunk. Learn, you know, ways
to... being 19 is all about.
It is, man. Yeah. Like, I was talking about that bar that's outside the office. I went to that bar because I could pay when I had no money and I was doing shows at Broadway or Stand Up New York or Caroline's. I'd have no money. I could go there and drink for $20.
Yeah.
Whole night. I knew I could go there and get gross Bud Light and a shot of warm whiskey and I could have fun and, you know, let loose for $20.
Right.
When I had no money.
Part of the reason you're sober now.
Yeah. Part of the reason that I can't drink anymore because I'm too good at it.
Found out what you were good at. Mm-hmm. It's drinking.
I learned what I excelled at, and that's getting hammered on a Tuesday night.
So you moved out here. How long have you been living in New York?
7 years.
7 years. And you're from the West, though.
I'm from Denver and San Francisco. Like, my dad lived in San Francisco. My mom lived in Denver. I was raised in Denver. Aurora, okay. Specifically. A-Town.
Right. And it's coming up on the holidays, so I know a lot of guys deal with this. Like, were there years you were just stuck here and had nothing to do for the holidays with, like, family? Or
I was always lucky enough that, you know, it's just me and my mom. So I was always lucky enough that she'd be like, I'll pay for your flight. Like, I'll bring you home.
Okay.
Like, I was never stranded here. Like, Thanksgiving, I usually spend Thanksgiving by myself here or whatever. And that's fine because I'm not really glued to that holiday. But like Christmas, that would probably be the toughest, just to sit in my apartment and be like, Merry Christmas.
Right.
But my mom was by herself, so she's like, she needed me more there than I needed to be there. You know what I mean? Which was great. She's like, oh, I got miles. I'll use them. And then you go spend Christmas in Denver, which is great.
I asked just because if you had any tips for guys who are stuck alone for Thanksgiving or something like
Thanksgiving, the best thing to do is smoke pot, eat a lot of turkey, and watch football. It's the greatest.
Sounds like a good Thanksgiving.
And it's awesome. And you get to nap, wake up, eat more turkey, fall back asleep, smoke more
pot.
Where
are you getting this turkey if you're alone?
You know what? Fresh Direct. Look at Fresh Direct, man. They do full cooked turkeys for not that much money. And
they did
cooked.
Not pay as a sponsor. They're not a paid sponsor.
Not paid sponsor, man. this is straight
just,
up
just a ringing
advice.
Endorsement.
Yeah, this is pothead advice. Order. It's like it used to be like $23.99, and me and my roommate would split a full fucking turkey.
That's incredible.
And we get mashed potatoes, stuffing. We buy a can of cranberries. awesome.
Potheads with a plan.
Oh, dude, if you're a pothead, you can find a way to. In Thanksgiving, as a pothead, you'll find a way to eat a lot of turkey. Do it.
I know we're on a timeline here. Did you, before we get to reader questions, did you have anything, Ryan, that you wanted to talk about?
I wanted to talk about that story, but I mean, if you already said it on a podcast, probably not the best. We were talking about before you got in here, the story I heard in the studio with your, you had a roommate that was a drug dealer.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean,
you did it like on MTV Other. Yeah, MTV Other. But a lot of people haven't heard it, so that's a good story.
Oh, yeah, it's a long story.
One of my favorite stories I've ever heard.
Yeah, if you look it up on MTV Other, we actually did a fucking reenactment of it.
Yeah.
Which was...
the series is called Inside Joke, where comedians will tell a story and they kind of recreate it.
Yeah, and it was... you know what's weird, man, is I've retold that story several times. When they had me hogtied on the carpet reenacting it, I was like, this is some PTSD shit. Like, this is post-traumatic stress disorder. Like, I'm feeling... Like, my heart rate was up. Like, yo, man, this is exactly how it felt. I lived with a drug dealer. I'll give you the abbreviated version. You can go to MTV Other to watch it. I lived with a drug dealer in college who sold copious amounts of high-grade marijuana, pounds of the shit. And
this was in Arizona.
So I was at the University of Arizona living in Tucson. And he got set up, man. This other guy set my roommate up. And my roommate wanted me to walk to the car with him. And he, like, gave me his gun. He's like, put the gun in your waist. And I was like, well, that's a terrible idea. But okay. And I had a cigarette and a barbecue lighter. And I remember, and I walked outside, and two guys were there with guns. And they got my roommate. My roommate ran. I was stuck there with one of the guys. And he...
So your roommate took off, and the other guy chased him?
Yeah.
And the other guy took you inside?
Took me inside, pistol whipped me, hogtied me, and then took everything. I mean, everything. It was, don't live with drug dealers.
Yeah.
It's fun. You get free drugs, but then you have to pay for it.
At that moment when you realize, like, what's going down, your roommate had the instinct to leave.
Well, he was, I was on the staircase.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going anywhere. Unless I wanted to hop about 15 to 12 feet down. Damn. Off the staircase. I wasn't going anywhere. And that guy had that gun pointed at me. So if I would have moved, he would have shot me.
Yeah.
And I'm not about getting shot. That's the most guy code shit you could do is not get shot. That's guy code.
Don't get what's shot. Going through your... I mean, I've never... I've been lucky enough to not have a gun pointed at me. What goes through your head at that point? Or do you even remember it?
I do remember exactly what it... And it's a little sad what I was actually thinking. I was like, please don't take my PlayStation 2. That's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, I had a new video game. I was like, I don't take... Fight Night Round 2. You don't. It's weird because, like, people are like, "Were you thinking about?" Like, I thought a couple times. I was like, "This could be it, man. Like, this is just this good dude could shoot me. Mm. I hope they find him. I hope my mom can sue to get money for this. You know what I mean?"
Mm-hmm.
And you really kind of just, I kind of started getting annoyed because the guy kept asking me the same questions. He's like, "Where's the fucking money?" I'm like, "I don't know. Where's the fucking money? I don't know." And it just became that thing of, like, so many questions, you became annoyed.
Yeah.
But
do you have advice for, like, if somebody finds themselves in this situation?
Don't be tough.
Yeah.
Also, this is the best advice. An old comedian told me this right before this happened. This comedian named Ben Creed, who's from New York, and he was, like, real grizzled guy that I met in Tucson. He was like, if anyone says they're going to kill you, they're probably not going to kill you. He goes, the people that do kill you, they don't say nothing.
You don't see it coming.
Do it. And it's like, this guy was like, I'll fucking kill you. And I was like, Ben Creed told me you probably weren't. But I wasn't willing to bet.
You're like, are you really going to kill me?
Just be calm. Give them what they want. Everything's replaceable. You know what I mean? I don't care if it's a pocket watch that was your great-grandfather's. Just let that go. It's not worth your life. Even your great-grandfather would be like, just fucking give him the watch. Don't die. Don't be a hero.
Yeah.
But then there's stories of, like, I have a buddy who told me a story. My buddy's from South Boston. He told me a story. A guy ran up on him at a gas station and tried robbing him. And the dude was just having the worst day ever and laid him the fuck out. Like, he punched the guy so hard. It was a fake gun, first off. He didn't know that. It was a fake gun, and he hit the guy so hard that he was asleep. He was doing the snoring thing, and he dislocated the guy's jaw because he hit him so hard. And the cops came and he was like, "Do you want to press charges?" He's like, "Nah, I think he's good enough on his punishment." That's like, so don't be a hero. That's what my point is. That's one case.
It's just stay alive.
Just stay alive. Yeah. It's not worth dying.
I would just hope that I'm not peeing my pants.
I thought about that. I was like, and I didn't piss my pants and I didn't shit my pants, but I was scared.
Yeah.
Because, you know, guy's fucking pointing a gun to my temple.
Right.
And it was a very real gun, and it was a very real gangster doing it. This guy wasn't, you know, you look in some people's eyes and you can see that they're capable of some dark shit.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of those dudes where I was like, this guy isn't playing. This guy isn't a guy that has a gun that thinks he's tough. This is a guy that's used a gun. You just saw that in his face. I was like,
I was filming this documentary series on teenage drug addicts years ago, and
because that's just how you roll.
That's just how I roll. But I was in San Antonio, the roughest fucking place I've ever been.
San Antonio, first off, to begin with, is a rough place.
It was a really bad situation. But I was following around this 19-year-old kid addicted to heroin. And, I mean, we would go out at night. He would steal 5 bicycles. We'd go to the pawn shop. I'd film all this shit.
Yeah.
So I roll up to his house the next day to film, and he's out on the lawn with 2 Mexican mafia dudes that are shaking him down for money. And I don't know why, I just like kept walking into his house thinking like, oh, I'll be safe in here.
No.
And the dude, my kid Ricky, came in, and he's like, "Do you have $20 I was like, "Dude, you know I can't." I was like, "All right, just take the $20
yeah.
And then they started to come in the garage.
Yeah, because they probably wanted that camera.
Yeah, they wanted, because we had $10,000 worth of shit.
Yeah, they don't give a fuck what you're making a film for.
But I like,
what's the cause, man? Is this going to be a pretty good insightful look? A drug addict?
You put me on TV?
Hey, man,
it's going to help a lot of people?
You know, I mean, people are going to see. They're like, fuck that, gringo. Give me the fucking pinche güero.
It was insane. But my AP, it was this other guy I was traveling with. While they were out on the lawn, I was like, find another way out. I'm not dealing with these guys. And when they came in the garage, we sprinted around down the street, got in the car and left. And I was the closest I've ever come to anything like that.
Yeah, man, I saw some real gangsters in Tucson. There's like some, South Tucson's fucking rough.
Really?
Yeah, it's not an easy place to be. And like, I had some friends because I worked at the radio station there, the local Tucson people that were like, don't fuck with South Tucson. Mexican gang members.
Oh, they probably had the tats on the nose. Oh my God. That's what these drug
And that's even before I lived in Arizona too, and like, that's before I knew who the cartel was, but you just knew Mexican gang members were the one people you did not mess with at all.
You do not fuck with them, especially if you're a white dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you are fucked.
Yep. You are the enemy.
Yeah.
All right, let's get some reader questions before we had to go. Okay, this guy says, how should I go about moving on from a relationship? This is @I'm_uncle_grandpa. I don't know.
Grandpa asks, how do I move on from relation? Have sex with other girls. Try to further the physical connection as much as possible. Just even hooking up with one girl, you'd be like, it's going to feel weird. She's not going to kiss the way your girlfriend kissed. But that's the point. You got to get over it. And you got to realize that your girlfriend is your ex. Is a human, and she's moved on, so you better move on too, because there's nothing sadder than clinging to someone that's already moved on.
We've got one for the former drinker in you.
Yeah.
It's @Caspa. Dan, which is a better shot to take, the Monica Lewinsky or the Full Metal Jacket?
See? You know who that is? That's an old drinking buddy of mine from Barcelona Bar.
Oh, really?
55th and 8th. Those are 2 shots you can get right downstairs. That's the fucking bar I'm talking about. And you don't do the Monica Lewinsky. Come on. Full Metal Jacket, let me explain what these are. The Monica Lewinsky is they put a black wig on you, and they give you a blowjob shot, which is like a, you know, frilly liqueur shot with whipped cream, and you have to take it without your hands, just with your mouth. Now, the Full Metal Jacket, the bartenders hate doing this, because what they do is they give you they put a army helmet on you, and they get a bullhorn and they just yell at you, and then you do 3 shots of Wild Turkey. In between shots, you do 10 push-ups. You do another shot, 10 push-ups, another shot, 10 push-ups, and then they give you.
Wow.
So if you want to look like a bitch, you do Monica Lewinsky. And if you want to throw up, you do the Full Metal Jacket. Or you just order a shot of whiskey like a normal person.
Yeah, I'm like.
There are fun shots, though. The Golden Girls shot is great.
Never had that.
Go to Barcelona Bar, do a Golden Girls. Harry Potter's fun because they light it on fire.
It's like a drinking theme park.
It is. It really is. It's a really fun bar. If you live in New York, you should go check out Barcelona Bar. Again, they're not sponsors.
It's just fans.
It's just good times.
They helped me in this times of need.
This one came in from our Facebook page from Christine Usher. Okay. I'm married to a 35-year-old man that still goes to spend the night at his friend's house like a little kid. Is this normal? Please understand, they're not going out, and they just like hanging out at each other's house like a damn slumber party, and the wives don't leave.
I think she's being fooled.
Yeah, I think he's cheating on her.
Yeah.
Because if I were ever to spend the night at my friend's house, I would be very honest with my girlfriend. I'd be like, we're going to smoke weed, play video games, and I'll be home early in the morning. Because when you're an adult, you don't like to sleep on a couch. That's what you do when you're a teenager.
Yeah. Unless they're just getting really drunk and he doesn't want to drive home.
Sorry,
yeah.
Christine.
It's Christine, either your husband's getting drunk, doing drugs, or is fucking someone else.
Maybe his best friend.
Maybe his best friend. Maybe they're DL.
Yeah, maybe all of those.
Yeah, maybe they're drinking, doing drugs, and fucking. And your husband's a lot of fun.
You don't know a lot of stuff about your husband suddenly.
I'd be a little suspect about that.
Yeah, it's weird.
I'd
agree.
Be like, dude, what are you, what? Even if you play video games, you're an adult. You can come home at 3 a.m.
Right. You don't even have to leave your house to play.
You don't have to get in your mom's.
Other people.
Your friend's mom's van so she can drive you home. What is he? Fucking not have a car? I don't understand this.
Yeah.
That's real cheating shit.
That's weird shit.
This one's from.
Sorry, Christine.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Sorry, her husband. Nash. Yeah. We just let a meteor hit his earth. He was getting away with this. My fucking wife thinks I'm just staying at my buddy's house.
The Geico podcast.
Yeah. Now I'm fucked. I'm going to have a guy show up at my show with a rifle.
I'm a little confused on this one. Okay. But this is from Yeah Yeah.
Yeah Yeah.
Yeah Yeah.
Is it breaking guy code if a guy does hashtag WCW, which I saw over the weekend and I don't even know what that
is
because I'm...
Woman Crush Wednesday.
Oh.
So actually really? Just last week, Kyrie Irving did Women Crush Wednesday with Melanie. Ooh. Big news over the guy code blog.
That's just a crush, Kyrie.
Clam slamming.
Clam slamming.
Scissor it up, ladies. And I will watch.
Or any
WCW. If I see hashtag WCW, you better be making a Lex Luger or a Sting reference.
Yeah.
Women crush. Is it breaking guy code to do a woman crush?
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, it's breaking.
That's women having a crush on women.
Like any of those weird hashtags. Like silly hashtag.
If you get into the hashtag game, you're probably breaking guy code. Unless it's fun. Like add a word, ruin a movie. If it's a Twitter game, that's fun.
Yeah.
But if you're doing women.
Women crush. Just do hashtag C. It's a crush.
Yeah. Crush Wednesday.
Or clam crush Wednesday.
Clam we slam. Clam.
Hashtag CS
dubs.
CS dubs on this one.
Yeah. Two ladies you want to see clam slam. Hashtag clam slam Wednesday.
I think that's what next Wednesday is
going
to be.
Yeah. We're going to get that going. CSW. Clam slam Wednesday. Who chicks you want to see mush vaginas together. In a sensual way. I don't think mushing is the right way. Scissor Wednesday.
If presented like WCW, that would be an entertaining
Ooh,
clam slam.
A little bash at the beach clam slam. Yeah. Throw some sand down on the floor.
Let's get it on.
Halloween havoc. Clam slamming. That'd be the best. I'm way on board with this.
Next
all
Wednesday,
right,
it's going down.
Yeah.
We got to get going.
Yep, let's wrap this up.
So do you have anything last minute to plug besides Guy Court?
When's this coming out?
Next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday, Bloomington, Indiana. I'm going to be at the Comedy Attic November 6th, 7th, 8th, or 7th through the 9th, I think. I'll be somewhere. I'm going to be in Bloomington this weekend.
It's a good town.
If you look at you. DanSutter.com for all your tour dates.
DanSutter.com, add DanSutter on Twitter. Please don't shoot me, Christine's husband.
And follow Ryan Ling at Ryan Ling, at Ryan _Ling.
Yep.
I'm at the Ryan McKee. Thanks very much. See you next
Thanks
week.
Thanks a lot, guys.